Okay. I'm the middle of the Oreo sandwich.
We are live on the MCU's Bleeding Edge. We are live. How's that?
Oh, there we go.
There we go. So you know who it is? We've got Perry Ramsey. We've got Cybernetic Shark. And myself, Jeff Sloboda. We are back here. The MCU's Bleeding Edge. We are the show. So, you know, that's it. We are the show. And we're back at it as usual, banging out an episode 5 of the Falcon and the Winter Soldier review. And, like, I can't wait to get into it because, Perry, I know you probably have a lot to say about episode 5.
I do. I think I do, you know. I honestly, although the second half of the episode was slow in a sense, I enjoyed that slowness more than like previous episodes' slowness, for the reason that it actually felt like character development rather than kind of like confusion. But at the same time, I wish this kind of slowness happened like 2 episodes ago, like this kind of moment happened 2 episodes ago.
Me too.
But that's, you know, and if episode 6 like closes out like I'm hoping it does, then it could not matter. But yeah, we'll get into that more.
I mean, you tell me, Cyber, are we going to celebrate this series at the end of 6 episodes? Or are we going to like, what's your take? How do you feel about the whole show as a whole?
I mean, honestly, you know, with what they've put out there for, you know, the 5 episodes that they've done, you know, consider we haven't seen 6 yet. I mean, there's so much information still that we don't know. There's so much information still to go over about these characters and kind of where they're actually going to head. I mean, a good example is, you know, the warriors from Wakanda, you know, when they're trying to come over and get Zemo. I feel that in its sense there, they could have done several episodes just about them. To really, you know, kind of flush out their story, because we really don't know much about them except for all of a sudden, hey, we're after Zemo because he killed, you know, King Chitala. So
the Milaje. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, the Milaje themselves, you know, they could have been several episodes if they decided to make the season longer. I mean, so in a whole, it's decent. And I feel that they cover, you know, a good minimum of the source material. But I feel like they could definitely go way further. They could have done, I think, 10, even 11 episodes. And I feel that would have been a little better length of a season. And so, really, if you think about it, a second season would be very good to their advantage to really kind of finish off enveloping all those characters that they kind of, you know, summon. Especially, you're going to put in a new, brand new character into the 5th episode that we don't know about. We just know very little about her. And you're going to end the show the next episode. So to me, that just seemed kind of dumb on Marvel's part there, because usually they're very calculated with that kind of stuff. So I was really surprised they decided to do that, unless they were going to do a second season. So in a whole, I would say decent, but it could be better.
Okay, well, right now, I mean, I got to be honest with you. We'll have to see what happens with episode 6, but right now, at this point, I feel like WandaVision was a better show than The Falcon and the Winter Soldier was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I do. I agree with that.
I was more excited to watch the episodes every week and everything during that run than I am now.
Yeah.
Do you think that is because in a whole, WandaVision was a completely well-concealed story? Do you think that's the reason why, probably?
Yes, well, very well-conceived. Yes, without question. It was different, something very different. And it just caught my eye. Like, you know, like there was something about WandaVision that just really caught my eye and like kept me interested. You know, like you never knew where the story was going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it also felt like something happened at the end of every episode, where Falcon the Winter Soldier doesn't necessarily feel like something happens, you know?
There's not much of a payoff.
Right.
Falcon the Winter Soldier. And, I mean, of course, we'll have to see in episode 6, you know, what Falcon's new Captain America costume looks like, you know. But I want to bring it up now, right off the bat, the evolution of John Walker through the episode. Perry, what do you think, man? What is your thought? What are your thoughts on, like, how they started off the episode with John Walker and then throughout the rest of the show?
So I think I think overall this has been his storyline has been one of the better ones for the series, and his start at the first start of the episode where they're fighting for the shield, and you see him, like, before the fight, he walks into the warehouse. He's like running away from the situation because he knows, you know, he knows what's going on. Like, he knows what he just did. But at the same time, you can tell his disconnect from what actually happened versus like his perception of it. You know, like, he believes that he killed the person that killed Battlestar, you know, like, he believes that, or he doesn't, you know, like, it's kind of like that's the story that he's going with, you know, like, that's what he's sticking to. So he's either in full understanding of what he did and understanding that and just playing that card so that he has some sort of like morality to hold on to for himself, because his character is super in depth with those kind of things. Like, I just feel like they are doing too much without his storyline. Like, if it was him versus Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I think the series would have felt a little more kind of coherent in the way that it wanted to tell a story, you know, because we were saying this, Jeff, we were talking about this when we did the podcast, where we were talking about how it felt like they're pulling at a bunch of threads, and we just didn't know where it was going, and didn't know what to follow or pay attention to, or, like, you know, like, it just felt like they were setting all these things up, but nothing has really happened with anything except for Zemo is getting put towards the raft. But I feel like if that was the end of his story for the series, you know, like, it's,
I don't believe it.
Right. And like, you can, and it's like, I don't think it's the end of Zemo, like, but if it's the end of him for this series, like, if that's the last that we see of him for the series, it kind of feels like we spend too much time with him just for him to be pushed to the raft. So episode 6 will answer that. But like, when we're talking about John Walker, like, I feel like we should have spent a lot more time with him and like gotten to know him better, and maybe in the beginning cared more about him, you know, because we saw glimpses of him being like the soldier, and he's got these medals, he's got these accolades, like, he fought for the country, you know, he has these attributes that people are respectful of and stuff. But it was a show, it was like, it was just telling us rather than showing us. And I think if they did more showing rather than telling, we would care more about his struggle and his decline into the character he is now, where now they stripped him of like Captain, they stripped him of the, like, the Captain America name, and gave him other than honorable discharge. And so it's like, it just feels like I didn't feel much when it happened, in the sense that I knew it was like, okay, this is that he's being put in this really crazy situation, and obviously he has other things going on in his head. Like, you know, like, you can tell that there's something wrong there. There's something that he's got going on, and this whole experience has been traumatic for him for various reasons. But you don't get that at like one-on-one experience with him in the beginning, where you get a sense of who he is at his core. You know, we just get a glimpse of it in the beginning, and then all of a sudden he's starting to do these things and saying these things and taking like this responsibility to a point where he doesn't know what he should be doing, you know? And
I think he's the character. I mean, you tell me, Cyber, what are they going to, they're definitely going to use him. And he's going to, this is just going to propel him into other stuff in the MCU without question.
Yeah. Oh yeah, most definitely. I mean, just the way they are taking the character in the last episode, we could see exactly that. This isn't the last we're going to see of him. Especially because he's being introduced to, you know, the character that Julia Louis-Dreyfus is playing in the series. We're going to see her down the road, too. So that kind of concrete evidence.
What is her name again, Tyler? What is her name?
In the series?
Yes.
Oh, it's like Agent. It's like five names. It's some crazy name. I can't remember exactly. It's like Juanita Carlosa, something like that.
It's Valentina Allegra DeFonte.
Yeah, there DeFontaine. You go.
DeFontaine. Yeah.
Yeah, I knew it was some Spanish name. Yeah. That, and like even in the episode, she's like, "Yeah, you can just call me this."
Yeah.
It's Valentina name, what?
Which is really funny. I always crack up. I cracked up.
Yeah. But it's Valentina Allegra DeFontaine.
Yeah. So Allegra, as she likes to be called, you know, basically we're just getting introduced to her, and she gives, you know, John Walker her business card. So that to me is saying this is not the last we've seen of John Walker. I mean, just to throw it out there, I think this is the beginning of seeing US Agent. I can't guarantee it is, but that's the way I feel it's going in that direction. Especially yeah, with sure. The end credit scene in this episode of The Falcon and Winter Soldier as well. So,
most definitely. Yeah.
I found her. Okay.
she's in the comics, she's Madam Hydra. So, yeah. So that's kind of like a lot of the people that are talking about it. That's the direction they're thinking they're going to go with her.
We had heard. I'd heard in the beginning of the show that there might be a Madam Hydra during the show. That it's very interesting. I mean, I'll tell you right now. What I thought was really interesting. There were multiple aspects of the episode that I thought were great, but the actual fight scene, the initial fight scene, the way they started off the episode, I felt like was really great. Like, I mean, yeah. It really stood out.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially that just you watching them all use their abilities and the choreograph, like the fight scene was so well choreographed and the way that people used like their abilities, like you saw like Falcon use his wings to like sweep the leg, Johnny, you know, and like trip up, John Walker and stuff like that, you know, like you just that was really well done. And then like the arm break at the end was just like, oh, like that was just like brutal. I didn't think that they would do something like that because they showed it too. Like it wasn't even like they held that far back. Like they went for it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. Falcon used his like his own power, like he powered it up or whatever, and they broke his arm to take the shield.
It's like, oh my
God. I loved it. When Bucky said, yeah, we want to. You know, like when US Agent, when John Walker said, you guys don't want to do this, and Bucky was like, yes, we do.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. And you just like get like it's that classic, like it's just that action line, you know, that action movie line that's like, that's just great. Like it's the I'm getting too old for this shit kind of line that like, it's just great because it's just like that one liner that's like, you guys don't want to do this. And it's like, yeah, we do. And it's just great. I love it.
Most definitely. What do you think, Cyber? What was your take on the whole fight scene? Did you have anything stand out to you personally or?
Well, the one thing I noticed from that first fight sequences was I feel throughout the whole series, like even going back to the Flag Smasher scene when they're on top of the trucks, they make it where John Walker seems to be so much more powerful than both of them combined. And like, they're like, and throughout the battle sequence, like they're like giving their butts kicked and stuff like that. And I just kind of crack up at that because I'm like, okay, so you got a seasoned veterans versus, you know, a somewhat seasoned guy, but he's just getting used to his powers because he just got them. And, you know, Bucky has been around the block as the Winter Soldier for many, many years. So it's like to see him kind of like battling with John Walker in this fight sequence, I was kind of like bamboozled by why they had him like he was like he wasn't as good as he was. And I just didn't care for that much. But other than that, I mean, the sequence, like Perry was saying, yes, very well choreographed, very well done. That arm breaking part was really intense and fun. I enjoyed it. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was a great addition to add to the scene, just to kind of give a little bit of a, I feel like a moral stand, like saying, hey, you know, you're going to do this stupid stuff. We're going to do this to you, you know? And I feel that's, you know, they're trying to take these in the direction of a little bit more mature audience too. So I like that aspect too. But yeah, altogether, the fight sequence was really awesome. But I just, like I said, I just didn't care for, like, they made it seem like, you know, Falcon and Bucky weren't as hardcore as they were in the previous films they've been in. And I didn't care for that.
I think that's a good point, Cyber. I really do. I think that it's really great to see. I don't want to say that there was like a dark tone necessarily to the episode, but they definitely pushed the violence hardcore there, you know, in the beginning. And they definitely, I mean, they showed blood, you know, like there was blood, you know, I mean, Disney doesn't usually like very much blood, but I'll be honest with you. What I really want to hear what both of you guys think about it. Now that you've had time to like, you know, to really digest it. The racial tones that they threw into the episode, I felt like they did a good job of making it fair. That's how I felt. That's how I felt. And that's coming from me being a conservative. I mean, I've got a Trump hat on, you know, like, I mean, I felt like it was fair how they played things out with the race card. What did you guys think?
Yeah, I think it was really like powerful in the way that they discussed it. Because you have two different perspectives, you know. Like with the conversation with Isaiah Bradley, you can tell like shit was done to that guy and he can't forgive it, you know, like in that, and understandably so, like, you know, like you have that aspect of it where you're like they tortured him. They experimented on him. Like they kept him locked up for years. And like anybody put in that situation, it's hard to move past and forgive that, you know? And then you have, like Sam, who is not just starting to see, but he is just more recently like getting that treatment from the government, you know, like he is just starting to get that, but his optimism and his hope is what changes his own mind, you know,
a different side to the equation.
Right.
You've got the Isaiah Bradley part where he's really down on the US government. He's really down. Like he's saying racism is like a horrible problem and like it's never ending. And then you've got Falcon and you got Sam, and he's a ray of hope to me. Like, mm-hmm. You know, like he sees that things can be better.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, yeah. And he's the symbol of hope in that sense where it's, he understands where like Isaiah Bradley says that something about where the shield doesn't, like nobody respecting themselves should be wearing that shield. Whereas Sam sees it as an opportunity to prove something, you know, like
he thinks it's an honor to hold that shield.
Yeah. And he knows that it could mean something different in the same powerful way. So he understands Isaiah's point of view and he understands why, but he also understands that there's a chance that if he takes on this role that things can change fundamentally, you know? And I think that's a really powerful conversation between the two of them, because you have two different, like you said, differing opinions on the same equation, you know? And Sam sees it in a different way, a less pessimistic way, in a sense, where he can see the hope and the light on one side, and know that he can, if he doesn't stop trying to change things, then it is lost, you know.
That's why I think it was fair, Harry. You know what I mean? Like, I think that overall the way they handled things was fair.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. I think it was a really powerful conversation, a really powerful notion, and it was really cool that they explored that in that way.
Well, yeah. I mean, you tell me, Cyber. When Bucky actually acknowledges to Sam, like, "Hey, you know, me and Steve never accounted for the fact that like that you were going to be a black Captain America," that was pretty poignant, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, yeah. I mean, they probably didn't take that into consideration. But at the same time, I don't think they look at Sam as being black or
you know,
any ethnicity. I think they just see the person that he is, and that they just knew that he was the right one to take on the mantle. And, you know, going back to, you know, how the episode kind of took on the racism and so forth and stuff like that, you know, as Perry was talking about, you could see the two different dynamics between the two characters, you know, between Isaiah and between, you know, Falcon, because Isaiah's from a way different generation than, you know, Sam is, because they're like, you know, 30, 40 years apart. So, I mean, what Isaiah went through, you can see why he's still the way he is, because that he experienced that firsthand, because times have changed so much since he was, you know, first around. Whereas Sam, he's lived in a time frame where, you know, it's become more accepted. There's things changing and evolving and so forth and stuff like that. So him being so much more optimistic than Isaiah is, you can see also another reason why, you know, Cap chose him to take on the mantle too, you know? And that is, you know, I think that's what Marvel's trying to kind of do, is kind of, you know, push it and change it to where these different ethnicities are becoming different characters that we really haven't explored yet. Because if you think about it, I mean, from the get-go of the MCU back in 2008, it's primarily been, unfortunately, white men that have been the main superheroes they've been using, you know, and the few, you know, white females, you know, with the exception of like Gamora, you know, who is played by a black actress, but you don't know that because she's supposed to be an alien, you know. So it's like, I feel that's what they're trying to do, and what they were trying to kind of convey in this series, to kind of show that they're trying to shift into a different direction.
That's a good direction. I think it's a good direction. I think that you know what, it's going to be really great to see a black Captain America. It really is. I'm proud of it. I mean, I'll tell you right now, I've been totally on. I've been all over this whole Sam being the Captain America for a minute now, thinking it's awesome. Like, I hope they make movies with him. I mean, I don't know what the next step is going to be. They haven't announced the season two with the show yet, but I really like, I would love to see a Captain America film with Sam. I would love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It sets up such an important step in that direction, you know, like creating a superhero universe for everybody, you know, and everybody can look up to whatever character they want to and feel like they can recognize themselves in those heroes. Cause that's like a big thing for a lot of people, is that when they read these stories in the comics or see these movies and stuff, they want to feel like they can be that character. Like that's something like that people want to feel like. And when they're constantly white characters and you're not white, like you don't feel as connected as an experience as a person to that. And that's one thing that I've like listened to a lot of people talk about, with them. That's why I'm saying I don't have that experience. But being able to like listen to people talk about what that is kind of like, it puts it into a perspective where it's such an important thing. And that's why like Black Panther was so monumentally important, is because for the first real time besides like Blade in the late 90s, there was an African-American hero that kids could connect with and feel like they had a hero that they connected with and they felt represented by, you know? So it's going to continue, which is great. And I really hope that they do make a movie with him, because Anthony Mackie's great. Anthony Mackie's so great.
Yeah.
I just want to keep seeing him being him on screen, you know. And
great point.
I think he's going to do a great job, and whatever direction they take the character, because at this point it does seem like he's probably going to be one of the main leaders of the Avengers, which is another really, really cool thing.
Most definitely. He will be a pillar of the next Avengers team without question, because he's a young guy. So, I mean, there's no reason why he won't be around 3 or 4 years from now when Kevin Feige decides it's time to roll out another Avengers film. We don't know when that's going to be, but
right.
It's fun to think about and speculate who's going to be on that next Avengers team. It really is. Like, you know, think about it. It's fun to think about. Like, what's going to happen to the Vision that we saw in WandaVision?
Right. Yeah.
Like, where's he going to be?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's cool too, because they're setting up like the Young Avengers too, and you're wondering what they're going to do with them. Are they going to be in the Avengers movie? Or are they going to stay in their own kind of thing? Like, what kind of? It's really cool, like looking 5 years into the future and seeing all this potential prospect for what they can do, and thinking about it a lot.
we're gonna get Loki, right, Cyber? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we're gonna get Loki next, and that's gonna be monumental.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like we were talking about that earlier. You know, Loki is gonna be a fantastic series, and like I mentioned before, they're shooting both seasons back to back already. They already greenlit a third season too. I don't know if you guys knew that.
Really?
Yeah, because when season one was first announced, they started shooting like a month later. And then about, like I said, halfway through the first season, they said, oh, season two is greenlit, and we're going to start filming right after season one's finished. Then after they got done with season one and they were about to start on season two, they said, oh, we're also greenlighting a third season too as well. So there's a lot of information that they want to get out with the Loki series. And I think that's probably why they're doing that. But also another thing, I don't know if you guys knew this, but did you know that on set of Doctor Strange 2, the twins were spotted on set with Wanda?
Oh, really?
Yeah, while filming it over in, I think they were up in Canada at the moment, I think is where they were finishing filming. But yeah, they were on set filming a scene with Wanda and Doctor Strange.
Oh, sweet.
Yep. So your Young Avengers talk, that could be a possibility now.
Or, add two more.
You know, or it also could just be kind of a continuation of like finishing off what WandaVision didn't really finish about the twins, except for them disappearing after Wanda decided to not keep that town under lockdown.
Yeah.
That could be it. But I thought that was an interesting factoid that they were spotted on set. Those same two kids that we saw on WandaVision were filming a scene. So I thought, we're going to see the twins again.
Yeah.
It's only a matter of time. They're going to do the Young Avengers. They are. There's no question they're going to do it. So, I mean, it's going to happen. I don't know how I feel about it at this point. I mean, I'm going to watch, you know, whatever they do, I'm going to watch it. I feel positive about Hawkeye, like what they're trying to do with Hawkeye with having the Kate Bishop character switch over, becoming Hawkeye and everything. Like, I think that's going to work out great. Like I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and then you have like Miss Marvel coming out in the late summer, early fall, I believe. Yeah. What if? And that's gonna be really cool because she has really interesting, like weird powers. And
she that'll does have be interesting powers.
Yeah. So what that'll be cool to see.
How many episodes is What If?
11.
That's all it is 11 episodes?
Yeah, I think that's what it said. But that's essentially 11 weeks.
Those are going to be interesting reviews, guys. Like, yeah, that's going to be fun to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we've seen a few different things, like the zombie Captain America and stuff like that. It's going to be interesting. I'm excited to see those.
I am too.
Seeing Peggy Carter as Captain America too.
Yeah, Peggy Carter. Awesome.
Captain Britain. Awesome. Yeah.
As Captain Britain,
yeah. So do we think at this point that Sharon Carter is the power broker after she got Batroc the Leaper out of jail and sent him over to the Flag Smashers?
No.
No?
I don't think she's the power broker, nope.
No, they keep referring to the power broker as a him throughout the whole series. And so I feel if Sharon Carter was even... if they don't really know her identity, I still think they would have referred to her as a her if she really was the power broker.
Yes.
So I definitely think that it's going to be some guy that's going to be the power broker.
I'm going to take the opposite. just to play devil's advocate, I'm going to say that's a Hollywood sleight of hand.
She didn't really get much of a role out of the series, Sharon Carter. I mean, she really, they featured her in episode 3 and that was it. I mean, that was pretty much it with her. Like, and she was great. I mean, she was great. Beating up all those guys when they went to go see the former Hydra doctor and everything and whatnot for the super soldier serum. Yeah. I mean, she was beating up dudes left and right.
Yeah, but she also could have been there to make sure that she got the serum back as the power broker.
Possible. You never know.
Also, there's a possibility it could be Bucky's friend that's the power broker that was shown in the first episode with him and gets beat up by the Flag Smasher. He possibly could be the power broker too. I mean, if you're going to go that direction, Perry, with Sharon Carter, it could be the same deal with him because same thing. He's featured a few times throughout the episodes, like Sharon Carter is, and he's been in certain situations where he could be looking for his serum too. So, I mean, that's also a possibility that some people have talked about. I've seen.
Yeah. And it's like at this point, it could be literally be anybody. But I think it's fun to. Test out those waters because it does seem a little suspect that she's now like she's just digging herself a bigger hole. Like after telling like the Falcon, just get my like get my name cleared or whatever. And then she goes and gets Batroc the Leaper out of jail and sends him to help with the Flag Smashers.
Yeah.
Or she's got a different game to play, which is totally another possibility. It's an interesting dynamic right now though. Obviously, I don't know if it'll answer them at the end of the season. If they are planning a different season or the next season or in a movie or something. But her character is especially interesting in that regard where we have no idea what her game is, you know?
No, without question. I mean, what I really thought was really a really positive aspect of the episode for me was the evolution of Bucky and Sam's relationship together. That was really poignant to me that they really, have become friends now in a way.
Yeah.
And I felt like without question, the scene with Isaiah Bradley was like a very interesting scene. It was very important without question, but I felt like seeing Bucky come help out with like the fixing the boat and everything and whatnot was really positive. It really made me feel very positive about the episode. Her like him like flirting with Sam's sister, you know, like,
yeah,
it was good. Like, you know,
yeah,
I enjoyed that part of the episode.
Yeah. You finally felt like they were friends, you know, like it was finally to that moment that we were like waiting for them to kind of find that like connection, and become bros, you know, bros fixing a boat, bros drinking brewskis, you know, like they're finally doing it, you know? So it was a cool moment. That's even though it like didn't really do much in terms of pushing the overall narrative, it was a great like character moment for them, to like you said, become friends and like have that dynamic, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, you tell me, Cyber, did you enjoy the evolution of the relationship of Bucky and Sam?
I did. I mean, they did a really great job with it. I thought the evolution was very cohesive, very on a very clear path from, you know, the start to the end. And I think that, you know, we would have that kind of dynamic, especially since, you know, when we first saw them together in Civil War, we get that dynamic was already starting in the car in that scene where, you know, he's asking him to push the seat up and you can see where that was going to go. And the most poignant scene I feel in that whole, in this episode 5 is when Bucky finally breaks down and tells Sam, you know, I'm sorry that, you know, we didn't think this through when we decided we were going to make you Captain America, because me and Steve had already talked about this. And that's why, you know, it gave us kind of closure on the endgame scene where, you know, yeah, where Bucky really didn't say anything. He just said, go Sam, go see Steve, and kind of, you know, explaining to, you know, why he felt so bad, you know, why he was so angry about him giving up the shield and stuff like that. And kind of finally getting that out and getting his feelings out. I thought that was the most poignant part of that scene of showing their relationship, because I feel once they did that, it's like, boom, we're bros, we're best friends, we are a team. And, you know, when Bucky says, you know, you can call me anytime, right there, to me, shows that that scene really proved to be their kind of their final point of becoming a full-fledged team, you know, because yeah, throughout the rest of the episodes, you know, Bucky's always like, no, we're not a team, you know, blah, 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 and stuff like that. And that's because of that anger he had,
right,
of him giving up the shield and not, you know, expressing to Sam, that's why I'm upset. So I thought that that scene itself was probably the best part of that evolution of that relationship, but also the best part of this last episode, too. That was like one of my favorite scenes of this whole episode.
Yeah, and it was really cool for them to have those conversations, you know, like it was a really good character moment for both of them, you know, finally like discussing like the elephant in the room, so to speak, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, it definitely, like I said, this episode I enjoyed a lot more because it felt like there was a progression of like the characters with each other, because we'd been like that, like tension between them had been like happening all season, and we were like, when are we going to get to the point where Sebastian Stan and Anthony Mackie are going to be like they are off screen, you know? Because off screen they're a lot of fun to watch in interviews, because they already have that like brother dynamic where they make fun of each other, they work like with each other, like they have like that banter, you know, like they have that relationship because they've worked together for years. And to see it on screen finally is fun. It was good to watch.
No, without question. I mean, what I wonder is, where does John Walker go from here? Like, how is that going to play out? You know, because I mean, we saw him in the end credits building his next shield, you know, like, where does he go now? Like, does the Thunderbolts pop in now? Like, I mean, how's this going to play out? Is the question.
Yeah. It's an interesting question, because it is, when you look at the last episode, you're like, okay, they're setting up like Falcon and the Winter Soldier versus the Flag Smashers, but like it in like Cyber, like you were saying before with like John Walker, this was his like first step into becoming US agent. Now we're looking at it and we're like, okay, is he going to show up in episode 6 to like, is he going to the fight? You know, like, is he going to like go all out and just be like, no, I need to finish my mission, kind of mentality? Or is he going to show up at the last like 10 minutes of it, setting up his future in the MCU, you know? So it'll be episode 6 will be really interesting in answering like that question of like where his role will be, because it could go either way, you know? Like,
yeah, great point, Perry. I think that was a really great point. I think that, I mean, he could go. You never know where he could go. I mean, to be completely honest with you, I mean, we talked about this before. I've talked to both of you about this. I really feel like John Walker is like the Monica Rambeau of this series, basically.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, he definitely is like the new character that's going to be playing a role in these grounded shows, you know. I don't know where he'll be in movies. I don't know if he'll play that much of a role in the movies, unless it is like a Falcon and Winter Soldier movie or another like Black Widow movie, being like a part of that. But it is interesting to see where he'll be, you know, because he's going to be US agent. So it's like now he's going to be a character in the MCU that fights against these heroes, you know, like that's, he can't just disappear, you know, they're setting up too much for him to just not show up and things. So,
oh yeah, he definitely has a career ahead of him in the MCU, yeah, without question.
Yeah.
What do you think, Cyber?
Yeah, I mean, like I was saying before, that end credit scene, I feel, is kind of like setting him up to become the next character he's going to be basically become, which could be leading to him becoming U.S. agent, which we hands down know that he's going to become U.S. agent at some point. We just don't know when exactly. But at the same time, this could be the precursor to him becoming officially that character. And the fact, like they said, like we were talking about it, Lager coming in this last episode, giving him her business card, saying call her so they can talk, and then showing that end credit scene, showing him building a shield, that to me is just, you know, Marvel kind of that teasing, saying, hey, yeah, U.S. agent's coming, U.S. agent's coming. And the fact that, you know, we can see in this last episode, John Walker's mentality is completely changed from what it was in the very first episode. He is not the same person. You can see that the mythology of U.S. agent is kind of evolving there. And you can see that definitely in this last episode, just with how he was reacting to everything and how he even was reacting to when he was talking to Allegra. You can just see the wheels turning, that he is no longer this John Walker Captain America. He is something else. And that his evolution has now officially begun, and we're going to see him alter and become something else. So with the whole episode and all, and just his evolution throughout the whole series, I can see it being a really classy thing to do. And I just see Marvel doing that in this final episode, showing him officially coming out as U.S. agent. Even if it's not the, like at the beginning, the middle of the episode, I can see it at the very end, maybe another post-credit scene, or just like right at the end of the episode, all of a sudden he becomes U.S. agent.
Yeah.
Good call, Cyber. No, most definitely. I think that, you already know how I feel about it. I feel like John Walker was the Monica Rambeau of the series, without question. I feel like he stood out to me as a character more than any other character on the show stood out to me, like, to be frank. I mean, like, you know, I felt like when they first introduced him, like Perry said, they made him look really good. Like, he sounded great. I mean, when you first saw him the first time on the series, you were like, oh, I like this guy. You know, like, he seems like an all right guy. And you're right, Cyber. He kind of went off the deep end And I'm assuming it's because of the serum that caused him to do that or whatever. But like, he went off the deep end during the episode and like lost control.
Well, yeah. it's like how Battlestar explained it in episode 4 before that. He says it amplifies, the serum amplifies what you already have in you. So basically, as the episodes went on, you could see John Walker changing as each episode went along. So I think when he finally took the serum, it just kind of amplified what he already had in him and, you know, bringing out US Agent. I think that's pretty much what they were trying to show and kind of what happened, especially when he killed that Flag Smasher. I mean, like we were saying before, you know, the MCU usually doesn't show blood, doesn't show all this kind of stuff, and they went to town with this and showing the blood all over his shield. So, I mean, that right there shows you that there was something already in John Walker that was not there, or just wasn't as apparent because he hadn't taken the serum yet, which made him just become more aggressive, which would probably bring out that anger in him and cause him to be more like US Agent.
Yeah.
Most definitely. Perry, what, I mean, looking back at the whole episode from start to finish, is there anything that we skipped that you found was like really important to you?
I think the stuff that we talked about was a lot of the stuff that I really, that I did want to pay attention to, you know, like it, talking about Zemo's future, John Walker's future, the relationship between Sam and Bucky. And but that last, so the last part of the episode where they're in the GRC building and all the lights go out and then it's the red lighting and it's signifying that they're going to be like something bad's going on, you know, the Flag Smashers are probably taking over the building and all that stuff. But that was one thing that was interesting because they're going right to the source now, you know, like, and also how did they get to New York City? This is just a plot point to me that I don't have to think about and don't have to like, I don't have to make an issue of it, but these guys are fugitives. We're living in a very like security driven airport security. And they went from Europe to New York City, one of the most secured like airports in the country. And they got over. I don't know if they took a boat. Like, I don't know if they just hopped in a boat and came over. But like, I want to know how they got over here. Like, I want to know that part of it.
I get where you're coming from, brother.
It's just a plot point that I thought of, and I was like, no, I'm not going to let this ruin it for me. I think that's – I wanted to know that they were going there. I wanted to see their plan a little bit more beforehand. You know, like I wanted to see like them working out a plan because I feel like – I don't know if it's an artistic choice for this the series for us to be in the dark like the – like the Falcon and the Winter Soldier are, like how everybody else is in the dark about their plans. But I would have liked a little more hint towards what they were planning, you know, like, cause they keep saying, hey, we got to do something. We got to do something. But like, it just didn't feel like they were gearing towards that moment of them taking over the GRC building, like, or it's insinuated that they're going to be taking over the GRC building, you know? But I would say that's one of the only things that we hadn't talked about yet was that last scene where like the lights go out in the building and the red lights go on and like it's basically party time for the Flag Smashers now. Have you guys thought about that at all? Like in terms of what do you think their game plan is at the GRC? Because I don't know what going to the main building is going to do besides like hostage situation, forcing them to like make things go back to normal. But like any logical person knows that it's not just a one group of government officials that make the decisions, you know, like somebody else would have to, like, the decision would have to go through a process. So I don't know if they're thinking like hostage situation and like forcing the government to like do something, or like forcing their hand in that sense.
Yeah,
or if they're gonna. Okay. Yeah. Because if they go in there and demand that the GRC do something, that's where I'm going to be like, well, they don't really have that power. They're a coalition of people. Like, they're a committee of people. So they can't really do much in that sense, you know.
Well, it'd be interesting to see how it all plays out. I mean,
yeah, I'm interested. I'm excited because I hope that this become like the last battle hoorah that's inevitably going to happen is really interesting and really cool to watch, which I'm sure will be. You know, they hardly ever miss when it comes to action sequences in Marvel. So I'm excited to see it, but I wanted to know more about their plan or their kind of their thought process, you know, be able to anticipate what they're doing, you know, like it's just that like writing detail where they mention that something is at the GRC that they can use against the GRC to further their cause rather than just say, oh, we got to take on the GRC. Well, it's like, you're just taking on a committee of people. Like they don't control everything. They just are a committee of people that choose a decision and then it passes through, you know.
They're trying to create divisiveness on the show and like get people to like back Carly. You know what right. I mean? Like, that's the whole point of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just I think the Flag Smashers and we talked about this a few episodes ago, where they had to do some rewriting and some re-editing because there were some other things going on with like a virus and all that stuff in the show. And obviously they didn't want to do that. So I don't know if that aspect played a stronger role in the Flag Smashers plan, you know, like I'm not sure if that aspect of it would have made them more compelling. But right now they're probably, out of all like the main characters in the story so far, they're the least compelling to me just because I feel like we haven't gotten much good or bad from them. You know, like we've gotten like, hey, like they help people in these refugee facilities. And it's like, okay, but like, okay, that's one thing. And then the next time they're blowing up a building and it's like, okay, well, like, you're throwing moral ambiguity at us, but you're not making us like or hate them. And it's like, do you want us to, because as soon as somebody does something good, if they do something bad, then we, as an audience, we automatically know they're the villain, right? So why even take the time to make them do good things when they're going to be doing bad things narratively? Because people are just going to not like them when they blow up the building and kill people. And it's that argument of ends justify the means, but it's not so much like they're taking out bad people. They're killing civilians.
No, they're killing innocent people.
Yeah. Like they're letting people become like in the crossfire, and that moral ambiguity doesn't work if there's no lines, you know, like if they said, yeah, we're killing people, but we're killing people who are responsible for these things, that's one thing. Like, that's where an audience would have that moral ambiguity where it's like, okay, they're killing people that are doing bad things to these refugees or not taking them seriously, and we're taking care of those refugees. And that's where you're like, okay, like, this is going to be tough because this is a moral gray area of they're killing bad people, which like whatever your views on like capital punishment in that sense, like being the judge, jury, executioner is, but when civilians start getting hit in the crossfire, that's where people are like, no, like they don't have any boundaries. They're just using quote unquote goodwill as a wall for their bad things, and that doesn't make them good. That doesn't make them morally good. That just makes them using a facade. And that's where they're not as compelling as like characters for me, and I wish that they were. If they were gonna, if this battle ends up being like the big battle, I wish that there was more, they were more compelling as villains, quote unquote. Or
I get where you're coming from. I do.
Yeah, but that's, I think that's my like, I think that's my biggest gripe with the like the series as a whole. Even though I'm still enjoying it, and it's not ruining it for me. But I definitely think that they could have been done a little more creatively rather than trying to force an idea at us, because that's what it just feels forced rather than committing to one or the other.
Well, I feel like, you know, honestly, guys, I feel like for episode 5, I think we've kind of like basically talked what there is to talk about, to be quite honest. At that point, I think I'm going to go ahead and cut it right here. And we'll just call it a night, and I'm going to go ahead and send over to you, Cyber, and send over to you, Perry, to say your goodbyes and everything and whatnot, and then we'll call it a night.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Well, Cyber, you want any shout-outs?
You know, just, you know, basically, you know, if you enjoy our streams, guys, you know, check out all of us on our respective platforms. You know, I'm under YouTube. We're under the MCU's Bleeding Edge, along with Mr. Jeff Saluota over there. We're also on Rizzle, me and Jeff are under Cybernetic Shark as well. The Marvel's Studios Dimension is my newest Marvel channel, so everything Marvel will be on there from now on. Jeff is the conservative voice on Rizzle 2 as well. He has his MCU channel over there as well too, and we talk all kinds of cool stuff like that. Perry has his podcast. He has not joined us on Rizzle yet, but he is supposedly going to
be. We're waiting.
Just waiting on him to join us.
Hey, I click submit on my last paper tonight, and then this weekend it is game on, brother. It is game on.
Okay. So supposedly, people, he is going to be joining us after tonight. So just an FYI there for you guys. But definitely check out his podcast too.
It's going to be exciting.
Yeah. So
I can't wait to see him.
We're going to have a trifesta, as I like to call it. But yeah, I mean, just a shout out to everyone. Thanks for watching. You know, thank you for watching our content on any platform that you do. And we always enjoy having people, you know, watch us. We enjoy talking about this stuff. It's so much fun. And, you know, we will keep on talking about it until there's no more to talk about.
And I want to thank Cyber, and I want to thank Perry dearly for all of the time that they've spent putting into these shows. Thank you guys. I really appreciate both of you. And Perry, if you want to take us out.
Yeah. And for Cyber, for Jeff, I'm Perry. This was the MCU's Bleeding Edge review of Falcon Winter Soldier episode 5. Oh, he left instead of ending it. Oh my gosh.
Jeff.
Come back, Jeff. That's all right. I think if we leave too, it'll end.
So yeah.
But this is great for anybody that would stick around towards the end. But
yeah.
All right, Cyber. I will. Yeah, it's the post credit scene.
Yeah. Yeah, right, Barry.
See ya.
See ya. I'm the only one left. So people, I don't know what happened to Jeff. You just saw what Perry did. Thank you for watching. If you're enjoying this, thank you very much for watching. And we'll have more content for you next Wednesday, people. So stay tuned. If you are watching now, we will be on again 9:05 next Wednesday. We talk about episode 6, all that kind of good stuff. It's going to be awesome. It's enjoyable. And it's going to be a blast. So thank you for watching, and we'll see you next time.